dealing that's there now, but that used to be a joint. You could go in and get sodas and hot dogs, and everybody hung out there. Everybody. And I guess we had the center, but I don't even remember that, because that wasn't the place. The place to be was at Ben's. This little tiny place with booths. And then a guy named Furman Atkins, who owned a cab company in town, really just a super guy, had a restaurant and had booths, and we'd go in there and hang out. But he came after Ben. Ben was when I was younger, and Thurman's place came along later.
So that was a hangout after school? Was mm-hmm. it before school as well?
I think after, because it was out of reach of school. It was uptown, mm-hmm. we called it, on Main Street, Cabo. So it didn't really affect going and coming to school. It was probably after school that was mainly the place kids would go. And I think the same for Thurman's. I mean, I'm pretty sure of that, because they were both not around the campus at school, and we were all walking. We didn't have cars.
So there was no hangout that you remember right near the school?
Well, that's a good question. There was a little store, a little shack called, it was owned by Mr. Jasper Robinson. I mean, it was a shack. I mean, I don't know why it didn't fall in on us. But kids, now that was close to the school, and kids did go there and hang out before and after school, and you could dance. I don't remember that he had food, but you could go there and dance and have a good time. And then up the street, this is on Brook Street, then up the street from Jasper Robinson's, Susie and Donna Weaver had a grocery store. And I don't think we could dance there, but she had the best hamburgers. And so at lunchtime, that's where everybody would go. They'd run down the hill, we called it, to Miss Susie's to get hamburgers and whatever else. And I think that must have gone on for years until she finally closed it down. But she did have good hamburgers.
Anything else that stands out in your mind
about
the school? Now, were you on the newspaper staff?
Yeah, remember my story about Hazel Scott? I was on the staff of the Orange Echo, and somehow or another got the assignment of interviewing Hazel Scott.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that at a woman's house named Golden Sellers, who's of course now dead. But that was a highlight of my journalism career, kind of thing.
What? Can you tell me more about the newspaper?
More like what?
What did it mean? Who read it? What kind of news was put in there?
Well, honor roll. What was happening with the with the athletic teams? Some of what was going on. I'm trying to remember. I don't remember more than that, but I'm sure that was it. What I remember, it was glossy, had a front page, a back page, and a front page, about four pages, and the way I remember it is that everybody was into reading that paper. Then this wasn't a school paper, but there was one time in the neighborhood a paper called The Shadow. And that paper put out, I don't know who was behind it, but it put out ugly stuff about people. Okay? I mean, it would talk about who was going with whose husband and that kind of stuff. And that was not school originated, I don't think. But I remember it having a very, bad impact on students whose parents would get called out in that paper. It was embarrassing. I don't know why I thought of that with the school paper, because they're not connected, but I did, because it was hard. I was trying to remember. I guess that's enough said about that. I don't know where it started from, but it used to come out every week, and it was really, people would be nervous about who's who is the shadow watching. I think we even had a column in the school paper called The Shadow. But in that, it was more playful stuff about who's going with who, and you know, that kind of stuff. So that wasn't hurtful stuff at all.
How often did the Echo get produced? printed.
Well, that's a stretch. Once a month?
Did parents read it as well?
I think so. I know my parents read it. Maybe not seriously, but I do know they would sometimes comment on, particularly on the honor roll stuff like that, but I don't know that they were really into it beyond that.
Now, you were valedictorian of
No. Who was valedictorian, to tell you the truth?
Were you president of your class? Weren't you in some leadership role at that time?
I don't remember. But I was a very good student, I can tell you that. I wasn't valedictorian. I want to say Margaret Battle was valedictorian, but I'm not sure that's right. She was very smart. I mean, so she probably was, and I don't know. I think she was valedictorian.
Let's go back to childhood and I had mentioned to you before if you had any fears of the KKK, and you said something about you had no encounters, but there were some things that your parents had transmitted to you. Can you?
Yeah, I'll tell you how the KKK interfered, and it was just by the sense of a lurking presence and not feeling safe. I was thinking this morning, just talking to one of my clients, and they were talking about something that they had experimented with, and it reminded me that I didn't do much experimenting because it felt like to me being to experiment was not safe. And now that's a weird connection to the KKK, but I think that's exactly the association I would make, that there's this lurking, dangerous presence, and there's not really in a way you can be safe unless you just don't get noticed, kind of thing. And you remember last week I was telling you about once my dad and I were going downtown to E.A. Brown to someplace, and this group of white guys, you know, kind of lunged at me, and because they didn't do anything to me because he stopped them. But it's that kind of thing that I associate the KKK with, you know, it doesn't make any sense, but that's the experience I remember, and I don't even know why they bothered with us, but that's my point. It was just like, you can't predict it. It's better if they don't see you. When you were talking about not looking at black men in the eye, I was thinking, and I suspect early on that was how black men survived, by not looking you in the eye, because that may have been taken as a challenge or whatever. So that's the presence of the KKK, but I didn't have any direct experience with them.
Did your parents?
My dad may have, but he didn't talk to me about it. But he may have, because my dad got around a lot, and I would imagine that he may have had some experience, but I don't know. I mean, it's not something I know about, but I could see that it would be possible, because in his job, you know, driving around as a delivery man or whatever, he ran into all kinds of people.
What did your parents tell you about how to survive in a segregated world?
Be the best you can be. Meaning you have to go to school, education is your only way. Don't take chances, which is my point about not experimenting. Be safe. It was not a totally good message, but that is the message I got.
What about when you were treated badly?
By
say, white people?
Well, I'll tell you. Here's a good example. When my oldest kid was maybe 3 or 4 years old, a girlfriend of mine, she and I took our kids to the state fair. And I gave this guy, he was selling balloons or something, and I gave this guy a $20 bill for two balloons. Well, he gave me back change, for 10. And I said, I gave you a $20 bill. He said, no, ma'am, you didn't. I mean, just to make the long story short, I went into his pocket on his apron and pulled out his money because I was looking for my 20. It was there. And he said, oh, he made some excuse and gave me my money. And my girlfriend said, what? You must be crazy. I said, no, I'm not crazy. I'm just showing you. I just was in his face about my money. And I got my $10. Got my change for $20 back. And I felt very proud of that. I was sticking up for myself. Okay. Then I went to, another time I went with another girlfriend to Sears in Durham, when it was downtown Durham. My son needed to pee. So I asked the clerk, where's your bathroom? She said, well, we don't have a bathroom that you can use. And I looked at my son and I said, pee. He did, right on the floor. Okay? So my girlfriend was very proud of me, and I felt very proud. I mean, it's like, I'm not going to be pushed around. I mean, I've always had that attitude, you know?
Is that what your parents taught?
No.
What did they teach?
To be not so, just to be.
To accept things?
I wouldn't say, probably. I'm an only child, I'm a girl, and the best way to protect yourself is to stay out of harm's way. Harm's way means you don't speak up. If you get into trouble, you take it and deal with it some other way. I think I have to be honest, I mean, to be fair to them, I think as I grew older, they really weren't promoting my just allowing people to treat me in a kind of way. But when it came to white people, I think they both felt I could not survive if I had lip. You know what I mean? By talking back, just wasn't smart. So I know I got that message very early on, that you just don't talk back to them because they'll hurt you. And I think there's some truth to that. Even now, in meetings and things, like they can't hurt me by, you know, punching me or anything. They could, but they don't. But there's a way that I was telling you about this committee that they immediately perceive me in a certain way, and they don't let me out of that box. You know, I see you. I think you're here to make trouble, is their perception. So they don't value what I have to say, and they don't really listen to what I have to say. Now, if I'm careful and say things in ways that don't offend them or upset them, if I'm always conscious of their feelings, then they'll listen. And I don't have time for that. I mean, I really don't. So I say what I have to say, and I take the consequences of that. Some people say, she's too angry, we don't want her, or, you know, maybe she has something to offer, she just would say it this way. I meant to brought you that paper about, the email correspondence about my suggestion about home visitation. Because in the end, this woman, I may have told you this, but this woman whom I think really agrees with me says to this other group of people, I think Vivian will agree, I told you this, I think Vivian will agree to drop these first two items. I don't agree to that. She didn't ask me. But to keep trouble out of the picture, she just says, I think she spoke for me. And they're so happy to have that voice that they don't come back and say, well, is this really how you feel? Because they don't really want to know. Okay. So I have to go to this meeting and look like I'm raised in hell when all I'm saying is, don't speak for me.
Where did you get your assertiveness?
Oh, God. I don't know how to answer that.
Were you with assertive friends?
I'm trying to think. I've always been, of the group that I was with, I've always been one of the more assertive ones. I'll say it like that. So the answer to the question is probably not. Maybe it's just that it needed to be said, and if not me, who, kind of thing. And I don't know where I got that from. I can tell you this, my kids used to really worry about going with me to the grocery store because I didn't let anything slide. And my youngest son right now says, I'm not going to the store with you because you'll be in there, you'll be jumping on somebody. I said, yes, if they don't treat me right, you're right. So he just won't shop with me, kind of thing.
Tell him he should go out with my wife, too. She does the same thing.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. She doesn't let anybody take advantage
of her. But you can't.
No. The mistakes that they make at the checkout counter are all in their favor.
Every one of them.
Yeah, and you go to the checkout counter half dozen times, and they make mistakes 4 out of the 6 times.
That's right.
You think it's a policy.
That's
after
right.
a while.
Exactly.
Yeah, my wife doesn't let people get away
no,
with that.
No, you can't do it. And I'll get home from the grocery store and have something missing out of my bag.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And I keep my receipt, and I said, you know, I called the manager right away, and I said, I got home, and I'm missing X. And he'll say, oh, well, when you're in the store next time, I said, no, I'm coming back right now because I want you to take care of it. Right. I said, it's a hassle because I'm across town. It's not convenient, but I'm okay. So I go back, and they're a little exasperated, but doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Let me ask you another question. Do you think they're more exasperated because of your skin color?
Oh, I'm sure that's the case. I'm sure. You know, the attitude, I know I've got to watch the time here. Oh, God. The attitude is, you should be so lucky. And that just gets me crazy. But you should be so lucky that I'm even letting you in here to shop. I mean, and you'd be surprised, but I run into that attitude a lot. You should be so happy. You should be so grateful. You should be so thankful.
Look how far you've come.
Look how far you've come. And I mean, sometimes I don't say anything, but most times, I have gone so far as to leave stuff on the checkout counter. Just walk out. I mean, I feel so good when I don't let people do that to me, you know. And I can tell you what, it can be black people who are nastier than white folk. And I don't let them do it either. And it's scary to stick up to a black person.
Why?
Because I'm going to see them at church. Or in my neighborhood.
They know you.
And they know me. That's right.
I want to ask you, I know you're in a rush here, but I want to ask you a couple more negative kinds of things about the community.
Okay.
There is no Shangri-La, there is no perfect community, and every community has some alcoholism, absentee fathers, divorce, abuse. Can you speak to what your memories are about some of those things where you grew up?
Well, I think alcoholism was very much a part of our neighborhood. I would say, I wouldn't say my dad was an alcoholic, but I think he drank much too much. And I wasn't abused. I mean, I have to, you know, I didn't get beat and that kind of thing. But when you're living with a parent that you don't know when he's going to be sober or not, that for me is abuse. You know, because it was just very unsettling. His drinking was very unsettling for me. But I think that went on a lot. And I know, I can remember there was a woman once whose situation was very bad, but I remember she passing my house on Church Street, which had a very long switch. Anytime her children would whimper or do anything, she'd just crack them with that switch. And so I asked her, I don't know what made me ask her either, but I did. I asked her why she was hitting them, and she was saying, well, they're not minding, kind of thing. And this was when I was 18, 19 years old, and just happened to be in the yard she was going by. Interestingly enough, some years later, after I had gone away to school and was back working at the mental health center, she and her family came in for therapy, and they were assigned. I was assigned as their therapist. And it was very good because the first thing I had, she and her husband and these kids came in. The kids were much older, but this was a second set of kids that she was bringing to therapy. But she was doing the same thing. So I had this guy, I had the family members kneel, and this guy was the only one standing, and he was pointing his finger and chastising his mom and his dad, not the kids, but his mom and his dad. And he has since, he lives in town now, he has since told me that that scene really stuck with him. It did him more good to settle that score, he calls it, with his mom and dad. And his mother came to me and said, thank you. Because when I was in the position on my knees, and this big person is towering over me with his finger pointing at me, even though I knew nothing was going to happen, that, she said, that just felt so bad. So bad, I won't ever do it again. I'm probably off the subject, but it just reminds me of the kind of thing that was going on, you know? And I think it went on a lot. That's just one example of...
So you, what you're saying, if I may interpret,
yes,
you, correct me if I'm wrong, that the physical kind of punishment...
Oh, it was rampant.
...that it was meted out was sometimes not done with love and kindness.
No, of course not. It was done with anger. People were frustrated, unhappy, not being paid much, had shit jobs. I mean, no, it wasn't done with it. Not every instance, but abuse doesn't come out of love. It comes out of a lot of self-hate and hating who you're around and what you're about. So there's a lot of that, too.
So getting punishment with a switch was not such a great thing
sometimes. No, no, no. Now, I got... I whipped with a switch when I went. I wasn't supposed to go. There was a big, used to be a little joint on the corner of Church and Caldwell Street. It was a guy that my dad worked with, but his wife ran a joint. I mean, you could go there and dance. I love dancing. So I would slip up there dancing, forgetting that this guy's my dad's friend and he's going to know I've been there. I wasn't even thinking. So I'd go home, and if I didn't beat my mom home from the laundry, I came home late, which I did this one time, probably many times. But I remember she sent me to the front yard to get a switch. And I got a switch, but it wasn't to her liking, so I got a whipping for not getting the right switch. She was really pissed off with me because she didn't want me hanging around. But I love that joint.
What time do you have to go?
I really should get... Let me just... I can't... You know, the line's busy.
Well, let me just stop here then.
Okay.